You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and this episode is like an everything but the kitchen sink kind of sode. I am spilling an assortment of beans, some pinto, personal beans, and some business beans, because I figure since we hang out while you launder, cycle, commute, hike, clean, or road trip, I figure we're friends. And so here's an honest chat from one plant-loving pal to another. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. I have no idea how people keep secrets. Like in last week's podcast episode, Nicole talked about how she kept her entire cookbook deal and book writing process a secret from all of her followers. For me, that would be impossible. And a former beloved podcast guest, Angela, somehow waited her entire pregnancy to find out the gender of her baby in real time. I can't even wait to get to a restaurant to read a menu in real time. And like how all the Bachelor contestants sit on the secret of their relationship status while posting casual photos with tooth whitening crap remains a mysterious feat of strength that I will never possess. I'm a spiller. I can't keep my own thoughts or feelings inside my head for more than a few minutes. I blurt out surprises I've planned for people before I can carry them through, or I plan a surprise on the day of so I don't have time to wrestle my mouth. It's like if I was a chick, I'd be screaming from the inside of the cracking eggshell, I'm hatching, rather than just greet the world with grace. I haven't even been keeping a secret from you per se. I just haven't fully shared the backstory of some announcements I vaguely made. And I am getting eaten alive over here, my friend. So now I'm a spill with my intention of one, feeling like I can chat and post freely about things that you, like my closest friends, are in the loop of. Two, preparing and updating you for many changes to come. And three, planting some seeds of inspiration for you to maybe expand your mind for what's possible for your life, as that's exactly what I'm about to tell you I've done. It all started with our shades. It was last spring, like the one before the one we just had before the summer we're in now, so I guess two springs ago, and the weather here in New York had finally turned from yuck to yas. And as a result, my Brooklyn neighborhood of Williamsburg had transformed its weekends from ghost town to Disney World. Directly outside our apartment is one of the busiest brunch spots in our hood. Egg is what it's called. And for reasons I will never understand, probably because I don't really eat eggs, people are willing to stand and wait on the street for their egg for upwards of 2 hours. It probably doesn't hurt that a few months ago, Justin Bieber got his egg on there, which I discovered by hearing bloody murder shouting happening outside our window, causing us to lift up our shades to see paparazzi and like 500 screaming, shouting fans going berserk for someone in a hoodie walking into the brunch spot at 4 p.m. I saw said hoodie and I just knew it was the Biebs, and I got my gut feeling affirmed when I caught a glimpse of him brunching with his hot cell phone date someone posted to Instagram stories a few minutes later. So two things are a theme here already, okay? Shades and gut feelings. But I digress. To the right of Egg, across from our second story, large, lofted, windowed with zero soundproofing apartment, is a destination beer garden or beer hall. I don't know, whatever the term is for an all day and all night beer drinking and loud live music playing place that draws frat bros who vomit on our street or fight with other bros who want to get into fist fights. To the left of Egg is this popular new indoor food hall with great vegan tacos, oat milk, ice cream, acai bowls, and fresh apple cider vinegar drinks, by the way, that draws crowds, press, and yes, thrice a day walking tours with mic'd tour guides and digital camera tourists, the works. I hope I've done a pretty decent job here painting the picture that is our streets chaos. I'll tell you that my body did a pretty fab job of feeling the stress of our streets chaos, which is why after 3 weekends in a row of me waking up early Saturday morning and pulling down each shade in our home to attempt to shut out the world so I could have some serenity, I started to realize something was wrong. The final draw of the shades, ha ha, was when one morning I went on an early morning run and I came back and realized I had forgotten to block out the windows. Jesse was just waking up and he emerged from the room, and as I walked in, he saw the windows were bare, exposing the circus that was our street, and he said with panic, "Oh my God, don't worry, babe, I'll put down the shades for you." I thought, is this my life now, living with the shades down? High on endorphins and dripping in sweat, I replied to myself, no, I want a life where I don't have to put down the shades. And thus began the admittal of something I'd been feeling bubbling under the surface for a very, very long time. Now, I just want to interject here with a little motivational nudging, if you don't mind. I want you to think about your shades for a sec. What's something that you're doing that, damn it, you deserve to not do? How are you living that's in complete misalignment from how you dream to live? Are you pushing yourself to like running and, damn it, you deserve to move your body in ways that you actually enjoy? Are you dragging yourself to a job that you dread and, damn it, you deserve to share your gifts, time, and talents in ways that light you up? Are you forcing yourself to meal prep for 6 hours on Sunday so you can resentfully eat shitty salads during the week? And damn it, you deserve to eat healthy, planty food that gives you energy and brings you actually joy? Me acknowledging that I don't wish to live a life where I pull down the shades was step one in making a change. I had willingness to be open to new possibilities. I'm a firm believer in not forcing anything. I found that just like forcing your blender to blend doesn't work, overforcing life, well, also doesn't work. I don't mean that you can't take bold action. If you've heard my podcast episode 85 about how I got my book deal, you'll remember that it was a combination of bold actions and lots of trusting my gut and releasing control and my timetable. If you heard my podcast episode 53 about getting engaged while also losing my mother-in-law to cancer, you'll remember that I was led by intuition and relinquishing control while also boldly telling Jesse his mom was dying and he needed to act so he had no regrets. The way I found to best operate as my best is through an intentional mixture of trusting universal timing, listening to my gut, and acting boldly when I feel natural pangs to do so. The opposite of forcing. Because spoiler alert, it's now been a year and a half since that put down the shades revelation, and the direction my life is taking is so much cooler than I could have ever forced it to be if I had manically hopped on the internet to find and move us into a new home sans blind situation immediately. So basically what we did at the time of the realization was shelf it. But like not sweep it and pretend the feelings of outgrowing our space weren't there. Rather, lovingly place the feelings on a shelf, lovingly out in the open. We acknowledged it as a problem, it being that I, and Jesse too, but to a less extent than me, was not being best supported by our living situation. But we also acknowledged that we had our wedding coming up in a few months, and planning a big move simultaneously would not be acting in self-care. So instead, to care for myself, I figured out ways to get out of the apartment every weekend until the yucky New York City ghost town street season rolled around again. So that looked like a lot of weekend trips home to my parents' house where I grew up in the woods in Connecticut, where they pretty much had to pry me off their living room window seat next to a fireplace overlooking a pond and trees, and occasional visits from deer, ducks, wild turkeys, and a mama black bear and three cubs. I'm not kidding. That also looked like many trips to Jesse's family's house in the woods in the Berkshires in Western Massachusetts, where I pretty much had to pray that eventually he'd leave the fire pit he'd built outside by a stream and come join me and Tommy for some shut eye. We spent our summer with very many trees and very little cell service, doing very little other than finishing our October wedding plans and staying afloat in our businesses. On October 5th, our wedding went down, and you can hear all about it in episode 116. And then we real-life Lion Kinged on our honeymoon. I say this to everyone who asks me about a safari. Going on one truly changed me. Seeing lions, leopards, cheetahs, baboons, elephants, giraffes, hyenas, hippos, antelope, buffalo, and my fave, the warthogs, running around in the actual wild, doing their actual real life stuff of surviving, made the actual real life stuff I'd been doing, like stressing over Instagram numbers, sales results, or email responses, whatever, feel so meaningless. I had zero desire to get back into work when we returned home. But thankfully, gosh, so thankfully, I had a book deadline to meet that wouldn't allow me to daydream about dropping everything and moving to Africa to become a safari guide. Bliss is the word I can tie to my experience finishing the book. It brought a level of purpose to my years of running Party in My Plants that I hadn't yet experienced, probably because a book brings a feeling of permanence. Instagram captions and whatnot will come and go, but books presumably live forever. And like the circle of life, the cause and effects, the true interconnectedness of nature that I saw firsthand in Africa, I kind of felt like my book could have some real cause and effects on people, and that made me feel hella fulfilled. So I worked on my book full-time from October through my deadline in March, a timeline which thankfully lined up with the slushy city streets and no need for shade shutouts or apartment panics. When we transformed our apartment for 2 weeks into a photo set to shoot all 100-ish photos for my cookbook with Jesse and Tommy and my brilliant 6-person team, I felt an overflow of pride for our home. My gratitude for our kitchen was at an all-time high. It became like a holy space for this magical creation of mine. And I am elated that our kitchen will be pictured on the cover of my book. But once the book was handed in and my 11,000 plus track edits, which I did on my desktop computer that I moved from my office to my kitchen counter because I'd become so obsessed with my kitchen after the shoot was complete, it was April again. And guess what comes in April? Not just showers, which bring May flowers, but egg lovers and tour guides and boisterous frat bros. Down went the shades again. This time with no wedding on the horizon, no book deadline on the calendar, and no second 2-year lease we were tied to, we were free to figure out next steps. Freedom. Okay, another interjection here for you, okay? As you'll hear, a common denominator in this whole thing was tuning into how I feel. Sounds similar to how I suggest you choose what you eat, huh? What a quinky dink. More on this later. So the first thing we did after recognizing that we need a change but don't know what or how was sit down, take some deep breaths, and talk through what sucked. Why did I feel an unwavering need to pull down the shades? Was our apartment only one flight off the street, just too low down? Should we find a space higher up to avoid the noise? That led us to tour 2 Williamsburg apartments high in the sky. Oh, no, 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 no. Looking at the tops of heads and buildings did not feel good. Okay, next. Maybe it was Williamsburg, which in the 4 years we'd lived there had transformed more dramatically than a Joanna Gaines fixer-upper. What used to be charming mom and pop shops was now Sephora, the Apple Store, and Chipotle. What used to be cozy neighborhood eateries were now Chase Bank and Capital One Bank and even a third bank, which I'm forgetting. For the convenience factor, I can't complain. In fact, life had gotten so easy for us here that I hardly left my 4-block radius, which includes a Whole Foods, an Equinox, a WeWork, a Dig In, Duane Reade, Sweetgreen, By Chloe, Van Leeuwen's, and tons of other restaurants that we love. This, by the way, was Jesse's number one rationalization for not moving. He loved these conveniences, but I was craving a life bigger than having brands nearby, and maybe with a tree or a patch of grass. I think when they dubbed New York the concrete jungle, they were speaking specifically about Williamsburg. So we visited other more charming tree-lined areas in Brooklyn, those beautiful neighborhoods with brownstones, strollers, and mom-and-pop local spots galore. While there, I did like the increase in greenery, and I totally soaked up the slow-paced essence. To me, it felt kind of like for those high prices here that correlate with the lovely quality of life, I might as well live in a house with a lot more space than a small apartment. So this just doesn't make sense. And truthfully, seeing the strollers and the cloth diapers in Cabo Hill made us realize that wherever we set up shop next should have, you know, kind of baby-friendly vibes. And considering that I grew up in an actual house with space wherein my family wasn't on top of one another 24/7, finding a place with a lot of space got added to the priority list. Okay, so we went back to the couch with the deep breaths and the curious hmms. Where could we go that has lots of nature and lots of space? At this point, the elephant in the room roared. No, elephants don't roar. They
horn?
Ah! I don't know. Basically, we started talking about the abandoned apartment Jesse's mom left when she left the earth, which subsequently sparked his dad leaving to live in Colorado, leaving the large apartment, the home Jesse had grown up in and the dreamy and livable with children Upper West Side of Manhattan, right by a huge park, completely residentless. I'll spare you the details and also preserve some semblance of privacy here, but over the next 2 months, we went from, oh my God, we're moving in, with many visits and Pinterest boards, a contract signed with a designer, tons of visualizations and excitement, to a strong gut feeling on both of our separate behalves that this move, while tempting because of the whole free large Manhattan apartment thing, would likely cause familial strain. So we ditched the plan I'd become obsessed with, and I fell into a pretty bad depression. It became very obvious that finding a place in New York City that sparked joy without draining all of our money wasn't likely to happen. It felt impossible to happen. And I felt helpless, stuck, scared, and angry at the familial issues. Is familial a word? Yeah. Familial issues that I had arisen and will be kept private. But I've learned that when you feel stuck, don't stay stuck. Words of wisdom right there. So again, for self-care, I made the effort to scoot out of the city as much as possible. 1 week, I scooted with just Tommy to my parents' home, i.e. my childhood home again. This 1 week, I found myself, instead of doing my morning runs on my high school track or the woodsy bike trail that goes on for like 40 miles behind my home, I found that I was venturing on foot through neighborhoods, just running past houses, drawing on my old bus routes for my mental map. As my feet hit the pavement, my heart started to flutter. A house? Whoa, do I want a house? I think the whole house thing solidified when I schlepped my parents on a 3-hour walk with me through my old childhood trick-or-treat stomping ground. Hundreds of houses filled this picturesque neighborhood, each one different than the other, each one with trees and a yard with grass. I will never forget standing outside one specific house who had a dreamy set of windows, thinking to myself, oh my God, if I lived here, I could just sit inside and read for hours on a Saturday without feeling weird about the thousands of people outside my window. Whoa, what an amazing life it would be to be able to feel that level of peace on a weekend. I could bake banana bread and we could have soft music playing. Holy hell, that is what I want. My heart and my nervous system want that life. I dragged Jesse back for the same walk the next week and I shared my vision. He shared it too, with a catch. He also needed New York City. A naturally very chill, slow-moving, and mellow dude, Jesse thrived off of the big city pulse. He actually needed it to like wake up and do things. In further thought, I did too. The energy of New York City pushes me to dream big, work hard, fear less, and do a lot. But it also drains me, a naturally anxious, high-energy, fast-thinking, intense person, a lot. And I realized I'd naturally been seeking shelter in the trees all this time to recharge. And I admitted that maybe I needed more recharging than the average New York City dwelling human. Okay, so more clues. Trees, a house, but where? And how could we also have city time? The idea hit me like a softball in the face. What if we could take our home budget and divide it, putting some towards a teeny apartment in the city that would basically be an office with a bed, without the pressure of having a chef's kitchen, a laundry machine, more than 500 square feet, trees, or anything else that a house could provide, and put the rest of our money towards a house? We decided to crunch numbers and scour Zillow. Now, a detail I skipped over, since at the time it happened, I had skipped over it myself, was that for New Year's that year, we had decided to bury ourselves in the tiny Berkshire's cabin instead of doing some city celebration. Jesse wanted to wear a onesie and make fires, and I wanted to go off the grid and finish testing and organizing the recipes for my book. As you know, if you've heard most of the episodes of this podcast, I am a big ABC restaurant enthusiast. Most of my guests, when I ask them their favorite Plenty restaurant, either say ABC Kitchen or ABCV, both Jean-Georges restaurants that make veggies taste almost illegally enjoyable. Since I'm a devotee to these eateries, I'm on their mailing list. And every year they send out an email about their New Year's Eve dinner celebration at the Inn at Pound Ridge, which is not an inn, just a restaurant to eat in, by the way, and which is just outside New York City. For probably the last 3 years, I had asked Jesse if he wanted to go. And for one reason or another, nah, too expensive. Nah, can't find a dog-friendly hotel nearby for Tommy. No, I don't want to. We've never gone. But I've always been so curious. We'll travel for a Jean-Georges kale salad. So this year, I finally just made us a reservation for an early New Year's celebration on December 28th. I told Jesse we could just go for dinner and then come right back home for Tommy. And that was that. So the 28th came and we enjoyed an easy car ride up to the small town of Pound Ridge, a part of New York, technically Westchester, also considered to be the lower Hudson Valley, right on the border of Connecticut, my homie state. As we pulled off the exit, we were shocked to find that just off the highway was this magical wooded town. Our car hugged tight turns on tiny winding roads as we swerved through Pound Ridge, oohing and aahing at all the seemingly random abandoned stone walls intermixed with like thick forest trees everywhere. We kept saying, where the hell are we? What is this place? It was dark and freezing raining when we pulled into the old restored 1833 Inn. And when we walked inside, we were greeted by bounties of fresh local produce, forward-burning fireplaces, and really friendly faces. We both looked at each other's faces with a look like, maybe this is Narnia. We shared smooches and wine and pizza and plate after plate of veggies. And as we drove back home, we both couldn't shake just the warm feeling of that place. And I, in true Talia form, also couldn't shake the feeling of, I told you so, about finally going to this restaurant after 3 years of prodding. So when, many months later, we were faced with a blank search bar on Zillow, I found my fingers typing in Pound Ridge, and thus began our journey finding a home in the thick woods and winding streets and similarly taste-budded neighbors in Pound Ridge. Through the spring, we hit the house hunting hard. With my book coming out the following April, as in this next April, 2020, woo-woo, it felt ultra important to me that we be settled into our new life with plenty of time before the excitement and frenzy of my book tour began. But I also wanted to make sure that finding a house happened as organically as getting my book deal or finding our wedding venue. My signature combo of blending bold action with gut feelings. Remember in the beginning, I mentioned some shiz about how I strongly believe in not forcing things and how I'm a big fan of taking bold action when you feel pangs of intuitive knowings or gut feelings, which is different than manically forcing changes or outcomes. I think the key to receiving those intuitive knowings or gut feelings is the exact same thing that you lean on to receive information about how a food or an activity makes you feel. Calm awareness, mindful listening, tuning in, slowing down, or tuning in while running fast. Movement helps a lot too, as does meditation. More on this later, but my point is that stopping to smell the roses or to listen for internal knowings, which are really the clues that drive your life to magic, is the name of the game here. I felt such a strong pull to just try a dinner at the Inn at Pound Ridge. We enjoyed it. We came home with full of plants and full of memes, but not with any we must move here-ness. Months later, when things were moving along, another soft, intuitive, what about that place we loved so much, showed up in my gut and I acted on it. And now it's leading to a life beyond anything I could have manically forced. To condense time here, I'll tell you that we looked at over 25 homes in Pound Ridge and its many neighboring woodsy New York and Connecticut towns. Because we didn't want to get hooked on the tiny area of Pound Ridge, which only has about 5,000 residents, out of ego attachment, just out of obsession to the name Pound Ridge. So we made sure to look outside the box. But ultimately, the house we found that felt like home was in Pound Ridge. And actually getting to where we are now with a signed contract to close on a house in October was a spellbinding saga in and of itself, one that I will full show tell in a future podcast episode. It involved a drunken text to our broker, a dorky PDF I made inspired by my book proposal, oil tanks, a breakup, tears, but ultimately it led to a home that we cannot wait to call ours in a couple of months. And for our tiny Upper West Side office apartment with a bed, well, would you eye roll if I told you that that's yet another spellbinding saga? Friends, I think that's a theme here. It's like, if you stop white knuckling your life the same way you stop white knuckling your kale salad, your life can flow just as well as your health. And if you stay present and curiously connect all the dots around you, you'll see how your next right turn just reveals itself without you needing to force it. So like that exact thing happened with this apartment. So as I said, through the winter, we'd brainstormed every possible living option and shuffled our different moving pieces around like, well, puzzle pieces. We'd finally landed on a vision that was taking shape, but simultaneously, I started to lose sight of the vision of who I am. Therein started a process of dumping all the Talia puzzle pieces out on a table, swooshing them around, flipping them all right side up, and trying to lock them easily into place to create a picture that made sense. My internal puzzle piece chaos really started the minute my book was handed in. After achieving my number one dream at an age younger than I could have ever predicted to write a book, I was left feeling a lot of, what next? I felt lost and empty and lonely, and a lot of things that had previously sparked joy, like making cooking videos, posting to Instagram, writing my quirky weekly newsletter, they all stopped sparking anything. No matter how many meditations, visualizations, or temper tantrums I subjected myself to over the spring, I just couldn't really embrace my next steps or accept my true identity. Knowing that of all the things you can force, your passion and self-vision is not one of them, I remained patient-ish. And I hoped that as I let my living situation unfold, my life identity would hopefully catch up. So the apartment, it was an anomaly of a March day. It was a beautiful March day that you lock into your memory, which come next March, makes you completely forget that March in New York City is not actually spring, but rather actually still a gross, freezing, god-awful winter. But this March day, this one I'm talking about, was so picturesque that pretty much every pal of ours from completely different friend groups all texted us to plan a picnic in Central Park since the weather was just shockingly suitable for being out in it. I decided to capitalize on the spring vibes by asking Jesse if he'd be down to go to an open house of an apartment building we'd bookmarked. Oh, and hey, this building's like 2 blocks away from Central Park, where a bunch of our friends were planning a picnic, so we could just morph our venture from Williamsburg to the Upper West Side into a social outing, too. Two thawed off birds, one kind of still snowy stone. I sold it well, I guess, and soon we had packed ourselves into our car to go check out this apartment. We got to the building in the bustling Lincoln Square part of the Upper West Side. We walked into the lobby and we were greeted by the rental agent right away. She was this cute chica, just around my age, and we were schmoozing about the building and which apartments we wanted to check out. We walked into the elevator, we pressed floor 3, and we held the door for an older lady carrying way too much laundry for her tiny frame. The doors closed, and as we started to ascend, well, we didn't ascend. Instead, the doors made a locking click and then started an excruciatingly loud emergency noise. And Jesse, the cute rental agent, an elderly woman, a sweet woman from India tucked in a corner, and myself get trapped in the 20-square-foot airless, deafeningly loud alarm-ringing elevator. They say that how people act in times of emergency is telling, don't they? Well, Jesse pressed any and all emergency buttons on the elevator panel. The rental agent whipped out her cell to call the management office. The old woman just stood still. The Indian lady covered her ears because she was right next to the speakers. And I cracked what I aimed to be comforting jokes about rationing the one bottle of water the agent had and how this is one heck of a building tour. After about 20 loud minutes, the rental agent had connected via phone with the doorman stationed just on the other side of the locked elevator, who had said that he'd called the building repair guy who was coming in from Brooklyn and would be a little while. She shakingly said, okay, and seemingly swallowed her saliva because, yeah, our water supply was running low. I said, that is not okay. We are not just going to stand here losing our sanity and our hearing and breathable air for an unidentified amount of time. So I asked Jesse to call 911, which he did with gusto. Once he connected to the fire department, who immediately, I can only assume, slid down their poles and put coats on up over their sexy tanned 8-packs to come to our rescue, our vestibule vibe was a mix of relieved and more panicked, since the reality that you are a 911 emergency situation is not the most comforting reality. The whole time, I just kept thinking what a grand story this will be and what grand life lessons will surely come out of it. So to try to keep the peace and to prevent any panic attacks or acts of cannibalism, I screamed to the group over the loud noises that we should all introduce ourselves. We heard the old lady's lengthy life story. Years ago, she had to quit her dreams as an opera singer because she lost her voice due to, believe it or not, acid reflux. So she became a stay-at-home mom who got bored and restless. So she created a theater program at her kids' schools, which changed her life and many youths. We heard the Indian woman's story of recently moving here from London with her husband, who was at home in their 20th floor apartment, but now was scared to take the elevator, duh, and was lazy to take the stairs to come to our rescue. We heard from the rental agent about recently moving to New York from California and the culture shock and how she actually lives right down the street from us. And then it was my turn to introduce myself. And when they asked, "So what do you do?" my response flew out of my mouth. "I'm a motivational speaker." Never before had I actually said those scary words. Usually, I dance around some awkward stammer of, "Oh, well, I have this website and I have a funny health brand and a podcast and a book coming out and I've been on Dr. Oz 5 times. It's never felt right. It's like the only way to stump me, the only way to get me to clam up and say words like a person who doesn't know how to say words is to ask me, "What do you do?" Literally last week, someone asked me what I did and I was like, "Oh, I just like kind of do health stuff and a bunch of crap." Yes, crap. Until now, though, here I was trapped in an elevator. I was asked to give an elevator pitch, a literal elevator pitch. And the truest, most real pitch, the pitch I'd previously felt like a fraud to say out loud, and sometimes even kind of still think silently to myself, it just flew out of my mouth. "I'm a motivational speaker." To which the group response was, "Ah, of course, that makes so much sense." Shortly thereafter, the hunky fireman came to our rescue and I walked out of that elevator door a new person. It might have been the ringing in my ears, but I'm pretty sure the buzz I was feeling was the self-identity shift I'd been seeking. We proceeded to view the apartment, apply, and set a move-in date for this fall. And a few weeks later, I signed on with a motivational speaking bureau, one that had rejected me 3 years in a row prior. Which all leads me to today. You know, all these little interjections I've been interjecting this episode with, they're the impetus for my new online home. Oh yes, I am launching an entirely new second brand, more of a personal brand this time around. And these little interjections are things that I've wanted to share with you in real time the entire time they were happening, which is the reason I'm currently designing the shingles for this new digital house. Over this period, I realized that while I heart plants to the cows come home, I get lit providing inspiration for getting others to eat more of them, I also have a deep, deep, deep passion for igniting others' abilities to eat more out of life and feed your mind healthy thoughts too. What I mean is, in addition to lovingly creating content that gets you crunching on carrots, because I nonstop talk about how real food makes us feel real great, I also can't deny that I love creating content that gets you taking bold steps into creating a life that feels as great to your soul as Four Sigmatic's chai mushroom latte feels to your body. Since I became a pro at choosing what I eat based on how it makes me feel, and then completely transformed how epic and energized and free I feel on a daily basis, I started to apply that logic of tuning into how things make me feel to non-food life decisions too, which ultimately has led me to actually draw in or manifest a lot of stuff I previously never ever would have thought possible, like whatsoever. As you've heard me mention, I am a huge enthusiast of Gabby Bernstein. I'm an OG follower of hers back when she had 30 people in her group coaching sessions. And Gabby's a huge fan of Abraham Hicks' work. Both dive deep into how manifesting is really, quite simply, embodying the feeling of what we want. The law of attraction works by attracting to us what we vibrate, how we feel, what we think about. And so if we think and feel shittily, we will attract crap. If we think and feel joyfully, we will attract bee's knees kinds of stuff. My new online home, launching in the late fall when we're settled into our new home, isn't going to be too woo, but it is intended to help you be the best you. Everything Party of My Plant stands for, creates, publishes, and will continue to work hard at is designed to help you feel your absolute best by way of joyfully prioritizing what you put into your mouth and what you do with your body. So after putting plants into your mouth becomes your norm and moving your body becomes a routine and you're feeling so good every day, well, then what? How do you take those good feelings, those positive vibrations, and turn them into your dream life? My new brand is going to be all about elevating your life outside the kitchen. Who knows how it'll shape up to be? I mean, I'm starting at ground zero the same way back in the fall of 2013. I started at ground zero with Party and My Plants. But I'm so relieved to be starting to share more with you than my plates. Because really, after running Pimp for 6 years, it's become coconut water clear to me that it's not just a lack of recipes or a deficit of nutrition studies or food porn that holds my clients and my audience and ladies I schmooze with as I browed Madewell's sales section back from being their best selves. It's a lack of courage. It's a scarcity of confidence. It's a shortage of inner unwavering willingness to go after the things in life they truly want, and a lapse in unapologetic authenticity to even admit those things they want in the first place. In my opinion, yeah, it is true that too many people are deficient in vitamin B, vitamin boldness. Boom. And I am so stoked to create a space to light sparks in your tush and soul so you feel empowered to live authentically, to reach your highest potential, and to just be fulfilled and free, baby. So with this new brand, you can expect a new website, a new Instagram, which I already started, but since I hadn't told you all this backstory, I've kind of just left sitting there kind of awkwardly. But now that you're up to date, come follow me at It's Me, Talia P. I'm planning on putting out new video content, lots of written stories, because I want to write many more books, please and thank you, and a new podcast, which I'm creating with my little sister, and I am so excited to share with you. Okay, and finally, Pimp has a new, incredibly exciting enterprise too. Last quick anecdote, I promise. So remember how I said that after I handed in my book manuscript, I fell into a depression? I said that's so upbeat right now, but it was a really bad time. I'm like all smiley about my depression. No, it sucked. It was terrible. I was blue for a long time. And yeah, a chunk of that mojo list was our living situation question marks, like I've explained at length, plus the lack of admittal that I wanted to talk about more things than just food. But a third chunk of this really sucky period was loneliness. You see, for my book writing process, I compiled a group of about 150 incredible, energetic, sparkly, plant-loving women from all over the world. They're who I call my Pimpbassadors. And we hung out for like a full year as I shared behind the scenes of the book writing process and as they tested every single recipe for the book, plus many that didn't make the final cut. The community feeling I felt being in constant communication with these women, sharing stories, asking for feedback, and offering mini coaching sessions added so much meaning and joy to my life. And when the recipe testing process was over, I missed them. I was truthfully nervous that the feelings weren't mutual, so I sent out a survey to them asking how they felt about me building a more consistent and larger community like this with coaching, friendship, motivation, inspiration, education, humor, and plenty recipes galore to make for your loved ones and to fit into your real life. And their enthusiastic responses blew me out of my filtered water. I don't want these joyful, inspirational, plantiful, friendful experiences to be limited to my recipe testers. So I'm in the process of creating a club that's open to the public and to you. To make space in my schedule for this massively terrific online space I'm creating with real life in-person components, yes, please, I am putting a pin in one-to-one coaching. Moving forward, this will be the only way to get my hand-holding and high-fiving as you make partying in your plants your norm, and it's going to cost pennies or rolled oats. They're super cheap. Way more deets on this to come, but if it says piqued your interest at all, and if you want to be the first to know about the incredible Party in Our Plants world that I'll be opening soon, hop over to partyinmyplants.com/club to get on the wait list. Okay, well, I think you are now officially fully up to speed. Go team! Oh, I feel like a bushel of apples has been lifted off my chest since I've been wanting to spill all these pinto beans with you for so long. There is a lot more to come in the rest of 2019, so I hope you'll hang around and join and read or watch or listen or whatever you feel called to do as I roll out my club, my new brand, a new podcast, and the works. And then in the spring of 2020, my book comes out. So I hope you enjoyed that and meet me at an event and that, yeah, I better get cracking on planning some events. And now that you understand our living plan, I can joyfully post behind the scenes stuff of leaving and starting a new Party My Plants pad. I want you to know that whatever you want to do, you can do. If only I had video footage of like 7 years ago, Talia, found frequently in the fetal position, having a panic attack, walking around feeling like a loser nobody with negligible confidence and consistent stomach aches, terrified of amounting to nothing, unclear of who the hell I was. Gosh, I have so many stories I can and plan to tell you. Because this gal today, who won't shut the F up on this here podcast, so sorry, is the product of a million consistent, challenging, uncomfortable choices. And now that you know that there's so much more that I want to chat with you about than just food, I cannot wait to share more deeply and also continue to eat banana ice cream and sweet potato mac and cheese with peas. Thank you so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. If your brain is fried from this lengthy tell-all, try Four Sigmatics Lion Mane's Mushroom Tea. It's a massage for your brain. Or if you need a chill pills from ever spilling your soul like me, the Reishi Hot Cocoa Mix is luscious and soothing and calling my name. The link to my membership waitlist and other great stuff are sitting pretty for you in the show notes at partyinmyplants.com/157. I am grateful for you, and I am so excited to venture into all this new with you. Peace.